Money FM 89.3, the best of the afternoon update. Money in the Market on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money in the Market. I'm Hong Bin Jung. Traders, buffeted by a swath of central bank decisions last week, are preparing for further volatility amid signs that a new era for monetary policy is emerging. The U.S. dollar, euro, and yen are all in focus this week, with investors continuing to weigh whether rate hikes from the Federal Reserve and European Central Bank mark the end of their tightening cycles, even as the Bank of Japan modifies its ultra-easy regime with a looser grip on bond yields. And to find out more on what's happening with forex markets now, joining me today on the phone is Simon Harvey, who's the head of FX analysis at MonFX. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. Okay, Simon, you know, with a slew of interest rate decisions last week, how have forex markets reacted?
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting past week. Obviously, with the Bank of Japan meeting, we've had a Federal Reserve decision, and we've also had interest rate adjustment from the ECB. I mean, by and large, they all kind of met our expectations, and that was that there would be some modicum of tightening from the Bank of Japan. We expected them to increase their kind of the parameters around their 10-year JGB yield. But the big kind of emphasis here is the fact that they caveated this a lot more aggressively than markets were necessarily discount. And that is that they would continue to intervene in that kind of 0.5 to 1% region, such that the yield in itself was representing underlying economic conditions, or at least how they viewed them. Now, that's very subjective. And then we saw the follow-up decision on Monday that they then started to intervene in that market once again. That was a little bit more dovish than we were expecting, and that's why we saw JPY just jump up above our kind of end-of-month forecast of 140. But on the Fed and the ECB, I think it was a lot more easy to forecast what the decision was going to be and what the market outcome was going to be. And that is the Fed hiking 25 basis points, ECB hiking 25 basis points, neither of them wanting to officially recognize that this was the last hike of the cycle. But the Fed being able to deliver that message a lot more convincingly than the ECB because of the strong growth conditions that are currently underway in the US economy. So we didn't really see too many ripple effects from those decisions. I think they came as expected, and that saw Eurodollar just dip below 110 towards the end of the month. And again, that kind of met our forecast for July of 109.50.
Okay. I mean, the U.S. dollar, it has largely seen strong gains following the U.S. Fed's, you know, aggressive monetary policy moves. This time round, it was that 25 basis points that was largely expected, with increasing hopes that this will be the last hike of the year. Amid that backdrop then, Simon, was the U.S. dollar largely affected by this latest move?
Not really, and that's what's surprising, because historically we normally see when the Fed comes to the end of its hiking cycle that the dollar pairs off. But we think this time's a little bit different. Firstly, we've seen that dollar weakness come through in terms of long dollar positioning getting flushed out of the market ever since U.S. inflation conditions turned that corner towards the back end of last year. So we've already seen a lot of this kind of long dollar positioning start to become neutralized, and we're in a lot more of a kind of a better value dollar environment than what we normally would see at the end of a Fed hiking cycle. Also, we're in an environment where we're still seeing pretty decent growth conditions in the U.S. relative to the rest of the world. And for that reason, it's not necessarily incentivizing traders to seek a kind of exposure to other capital markets and portfolio flows to start feeding into the likes of the Eurozone or China, for example, because we still have these robust gains in the U.S. So we haven't really seen that sell-off. And this is also supported by the fact that we haven't really seen U.S. yields fall that much further after the Fed decision, too. And that's because Chair Powell was able to lean on these strong growth conditions to effectively tell markets there is a risk here, that because the U.S. economy is still growing at, if not slightly above, the potential rate of growth, that this is going to filter into a bit more inflation persistence, and the risk is still there that we would need to hike in Q4. Now, that was delivered a lot more effectively than maybe from the ECB, where all of a sudden growth conditions are stagnant and they should start to weigh on inflation pressures.
Okay. Then how have Asian currencies reacted on the back of how the U.S. dollar reacted?
Yeah, I think it's been twofold over the past week. Mm-hmm. There's been obviously some more marginal easing from Beijing to try and stimulate growth, but that's pretty much been offset by the fact that this soft landing narrative, or at least the potential for the Fed to end its hiking cycle, has been pushed back a little bit by these growth conditions, by the fact that, you know, maybe there's a little bit more here in this tightening cycle that we need to be aware of. And I think that's really filtered through into Asian currencies, because, you know, we've had their kind of strong rally after the weak kind of jobs report, after the weak inflation report, and they're really subject to that kind of pullback in the dollar. Now, on the other hand, obviously, you then have the influence of the Bank of Japan meeting. You know, that's really kind of weighed heavy too. And the mix of it as a whole for APAC currencies has been pretty negative over the past week. But it needs to be viewed in the context of how July has kind of evolved as a whole. Mm-hmm. And these Asian currencies do tend to be, or are generally higher on the month, although we did see that kind of significant retracement over the past week.
Okay, so then Simon, is the US dollar set for more volatility?
I think so. I think we're now in this data-dependent period for markets. And, you know, the data is going to generate a lot more volatility. So on the one hand, we kind of know roughly where rates are going to be over the near term, over the next 2 to 3 months.
Right.
There is still that risk there that the Fed has to go again in Q4. And the data is going to be very, very instrumental in determining whether this actually takes place. So whether it's signs that there are, you know, kind of renewed wage pressures in the labor market, or, you know, a bit of a plateau in the pace of disinflation in the inflation report, but more specifically, if the U.S. consumer continues to hold up under this higher interest rate environment, that's going to lead to an uptick in U.S. rates. That's going to filter through into potentially a kind of a continued rebound in the U.S. dollar. On the other hand, if all of a sudden we start to see growth conditions cool quite considerably, because the data we're monitoring is quite lag, if all of a sudden Q3 starts to look a lot softer in terms of growth, then all of a sudden that gets priced out. Then we're in a lower U.S. yield environment and the dollar can sell off even further. So I think there is still a lot there for, you know, kind of more traditional levels of volatility coming into Q4. I don't think we're necessarily going to sit into, you know, what is the typical summer kind of market. I think there's too many dynamics still that are kind of ongoing for that to occur. But maybe we might see a bit of a quiet period over August, just as, you know, monetary policy does kind of take a step back before these September meetings. Yes, we have Jackson Hole, but really there's not much need for central bankers to come out and give any forward guidance at this point. So we're not really expecting too much on that front.
Okay. Then would you say investors should be buying into the U.S. dollar at the moment? Or is there another currency that's proving to be a bright spot in the current market?
Yeah, we think the dollar still has some defensive attributes here in this market. We're not in this environment where all of a sudden the U.S. economy is slowing down so substantially relative to the Eurozone and China. We're going to see these big kind of capital reallocations that weaken the dollar. So we do still believe that the dollar's got some legs here. We don't necessarily think it's going to grind too much higher, but it's definitely not going to capitulate. So we wouldn't necessarily advise diversifying out of the dollar too aggressively. We'd be more selective on how we would do it. Mm-hmm. And we are looking at things like going into those carry currencies once again. You know, we've been beating this drum all year. And despite the fact that positioning is very saturated in some of these carry expressions, we like the looks of the Mexican peso. We like the looks of currencies that are very kind of exposed to U.S. growth and will keep these higher interest rates for longer. And Mexico just keeps coming back as currency within this kind of high-yielding basket that is just going to keep giving us decent levels of growth and decent levels of return. What I would say specifically within the APAC region is that we still have a bit more of a bullish view on AUD. We think ultimately there is more to come from China. We think it's not necessarily going to happen in the next month, but the closer we get to year end, the less realistic that 5% growth target looks like, the more likely the traditional fiscal measures are likely to come out of Beijing. And that would be very stimulative for AUD. But we also think the RBA's recent dovish decision has provided a bit more of a better entry point for long AUD positions. And this is because, you know, markets are really looking for signs that the RBA is syncing up their hiking cycle with their forecast projections or the release of them. And this just didn't happen. And that, you know, markets now say, okay, well, maybe the RBA has actually done in this environment. And I think they're really misunderstanding what they're trying to achieve here. I mean, ultimately, the Reserve Bank of Australia is very, very, very dependent on what the wage pressures out of the labour market look like. And we only get wage data from them on a quarterly basis. It doesn't come out until mid-August. And if it does come out strong, which it's just, which the kind of the more frequent unemployment measures and so forth suggest, then all of a sudden the hike for September is well and truly back on the table.
Okay.
And markets are just really struggling to understand this reaction function. And we think because of the bearish response to the last meeting, there is a really good entry point here to go kind of long AUD over the next 3 months with that prospect of Chinese stimulus picking up a tailwind as well.
I see. I mean, you've talked about the Mexican peso and the Chinese yuan there, but what about the euro? I mean, the ECB also raised rates last week. How did it respond to that decision?
Fairly negatively, to be honest with you. I mean, on the whole, we've seen euro dollar go back down below 110. It's really tailed off from, you know, kind of the post-war highs that we saw in the mid part of July of around just below 113. And the reason for this, again, is fundamentally the ECB is trying to cast the same message as the Fed. And that is, you know, we may pause in September, but that's not necessarily a sign that we're done with our hiking cycle and so forth. But the ECB's dependence on a lot worse data than the Fed is. And therefore, markets are really struggling to buy into the idea that there's going to be an extension in the hiking cycle. When you layer on top of that the fact that growth conditions out of the Eurozone, okay, they came in a little bit better than expected for Q2, they're still stagnant. And if you strip out more volatile impacts like the impact Ireland has on Eurozone GDP, actually that positive surprise is very small. So it almost disappears. So the Eurozone growth conditions are stagnant at best. And that doesn't really kind of lead markets to go, okay, do you know what, let me diversify outside of a US economy that's annualizing growth around 2% into a stagnant Eurozone economy where rates aren't going to go higher either. So we think at the moment the euro is going to really struggle over the next few months before all of a sudden we're going to start seeing inflation conditions really drop off, real rates in the Eurozone increase, and all of a sudden the pressure on the Eurozone economy starts to unwind and we start to see a bit of a sequential pickup in growth conditions. Then all of a sudden the prospective outlook for Eurozone assets improves quite considerably. At the same time, towards the end of the year, we think that the US economy is going to start tailing off, and potentially that could lead to an end of the tightening cycle, and then rate cuts start to come into view. That's a lot better mix to go long euro dollar on a structural basis. So we're kind of waiting for that towards the end of the year.
I see. So a closer look here now to Asia. What about the Japanese yen? I mean, with that surprise move from the BOJ, the Japanese yen, it's extended losses these past few days. Do you see any recovery for the Japanese yen anytime soon?
There are two notable things that happened in dollar JPY price action over the past month. The first is its inability to break north of 145 because of the threat of potentially stealth intervention once again. And then secondly is its inability to consolidate below 140 because all of a sudden the Bank of Japan is pushing back on this idea that monetary policy is going to be normalized on a more sustained basis. So we've got this kind of range-bound nature for dollar JPY in the near term where the Bank of Japan's actions either side of that range are going to really restrict it. Now, the one thing that we found quite interesting or how we view the Bank of Japan's actions is that they're really pushing back on the idea that this is the start of the normalization cycle. And markets are buying into it. Now, the Bank of Japan gave us the same kind of dovish commentary ahead of its last meeting, and it will continue giving us dovish commentary as it exits this ultra-loose monetary policy stance. And that's because ultimately it doesn't want to lead, or it doesn't want markets to speculate that all of a sudden monetary policy is going to go through a big regime shift, force their hand quicker than it necessarily has to do this process, like it did in Australia, and lead to an emergency abandonment of yield curve control or renewed kind of intervention in markets. So we're kind of looking through the rhetoric from the Bank of Japan, and actually we think if the underlying inflation conditions continue on their current trajectory, then all of a sudden that October meeting is going to see a much higher inflation projection for fiscal year 2024. That in itself should be enough to see another normalization step be taken by the Bank of Japan. I think they're just buying time at the moment. So that's really when we start to expect dollar JPY to break out from its ranges. At that time, we do start to think markets are going to really look into the idea of the extent to which the Fed are going to ease in 2024. So lower US rates, potential of an increase in Japanese rates once again, is really going to benefit dollar JPY. And we are structurally kind of bullish on the yen over the next 6 to 12 months. We're just waiting for these conditions to come through. And we think because of the bank's intervention actions, mm-hmm. we're going to be stuck in that 140 to 145 range in the interim.
Okay. So can we also expect more volatility for the yen as well then? I mean, what could help stabilize the currency?
So I see this going one of two ways, and it's quite difficult to say in advance. Yes, you're going to see stability in terms of, you know, it's going to trade in a 5-point range. But on the other hand, the Bank of Japan's kind of latest tweak to its yield curve control to make it more flexible really is quite ambiguous. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to allow 10-year yields to trade between 0.5% and 1%, depending on their view that those yields reflect the underlying economic fundamentals. Now, that's a really grey area for markets to trade because we don't know how they're viewing these economic fundamentals. We can only take their actions as a signal. So it wouldn't surprise me over the next few weeks, maybe even a few months, we see more notices that the Bank of Japan's intervening again in 10-year JGBs. And that's going to induce more volatility on an intraday basis. Now, we're not going to see these kind of huge ranges, I don't think, in the sense that over the next month or two, we're going to see dollar JPY trade out of that 140 to 145 range. But I do think we're going to see continued volatility on an intraday basis.
Okay. And before we let you off here, Simon, what then should investors look out for in the next couple of weeks that could move forex markets?
Data. I think we're now done on the we're now done with regards to listening to the central bank. We're in this period where, to their own admission, they are solely data dependent, and therefore doesn't matter what they say. If it's not backed up by the data, then it's completely meaningless. So we're going to be looking at things like not just the inflation data, not just the labor market data. We're going to be looking at things that are measuring growth, especially consumer growth, services growth, because that underlying pressure there from the consumer is really going to determine whether we see kind of decent or sustained inflationary pressures and potentially further rate hikes from central banks moving forward. So what I would say is that the market focus is going to become a bit more holistic on the economic fundamentals. We're not just going to be driven by central bank commentary and inflation data anymore.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time and your insights today, Simon.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Simon Harvey, who's the head of FX analysis at MonFX. I'm Hong Bin Jung, and this has been Money in the Market. Stay with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to the full interview, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.